A simple game of basketball. The play experience is real. It's tangible. Three boys in a hoop out back, learning lessons of sportsmanship and cooperation. Historically, our play activity has been very social, relying heavily on interaction and imagination. But what about video game play?
Increasingly for young boys, coming home from school means going into their rooms and plugging into the video game system. When they're doing that, we should remember that they're not outside playing with their peers, they're not exploring their neighborhood or forming social bonds with people around them. What they're doing is they're plugging into a pre-programmed game experience that controls their imagination.
According to Klein, traditional forms of play promote a wide variety of experiences, but the range of experience offered by the video game is simply limited to what will sell in the market. This means that in most cases, the experience offered to the gamer is primarily designed to promote conflict and intensity.
Video games are more than a toy. They're a communication medium, and by that we mean that when kids play, they not only experience the content, but they interact with that content in a unique way, which means that when they're playing, they're also assimilating values and norms and themes that are embedded in that play experience.
So what are video games communicating to our children? And what effect, if any, do they have on our kids? Violence. With each new advance in technology, the representation of violence becomes much more extreme and realistic. Violence spans the universe of gaming, providing in one form or another the key entertainment value in almost all genres. With little doubt, the most popular video games are violent. And for many gamers, experiencing violence is the motivating factor to play.
It means a lot because it makes you have a goal and stuff to hurt the person. Hurt them harder. Because like normally it would be like either racing or hurting another person. Because what else would you have? What other like goals would you have?
In many of the most popular games, the only goal is to kill. And the groundbreaking Doom and the extremely successful Duke Nukem are good examples. In these games, players experience spectacular levels of violence, as if they were looking straight through their own eyes and right down the barrel of a gun. These games are called in the trade first-person shooters, and they are being implicated in spreading the virus of violence, now infecting teenage culture.
Tonight, another school shooting, this time in Alberta. Two students are shot, another is in custody. Was it a copycat crime?
The recent rash of school shootings, from Littleton, Colorado to Tabor, Alberta, have triggered new calls in the media to curb violence in video games.
Recent outbreaks of youth violence, such as the tragedy at Columbine High School, have brought some fresh attention to violent video games.
Many of the teen killers involved in the school massacres were avid players of first-person shooters. And as these murderous students leave a trail of carnage in the classroom, the parents of the victims are beginning to question video game violence in an attempt to explain the unexplainable.
You know, on a video screen, the blood doesn't have any smell. You can't touch it, you can't feel it.
I think that the video games are just like the straw that broke the camel's back. You know, we're not saying this is the only thing that is causing them, but it is a contributing factor.
We're asking, telling the entertainment industry that we expect them to be responsible for what they put out of the market. If they want to make the violent video games, go ahead. But you're responsible for what you do.
This call for industry responsibility is nothing new. In the early 1990s, the game Mortal Kombat, which is sanitary compared to today's standards, sparked a continent-wide debate. Canadian and U.S. lawmakers pressured game manufacturers to institute a game rating system to warn parents and to develop voluntary codes of conduct to limit violence. However, these measures have done little to curb the explosion of violence in video games.
Come in, have a seat. What we're going to do today is get you to play a couple of video games, so go ahead and sit down. And we'll have you.
With so much concern and so little clear evidence regarding the specific effects of long-term exposure to video game violence, the SFU research team conducted the Icarus experiment.
What we're measuring on the forehead is something called EMG. And what you can correlate EMG with is how much a person is concentrating.
The Icarus experiment is designed to measure a variety of different physiological responses of both male and female gamers playing both violent and non-violent video games.
What we're looking for is the first step to understanding what happens to kids, how they react to playing video games. And when we look at their physiological response, we can compare that with their self-reports about how they feel about how they're playing and see if we're actually seeing them respond in ways different than television, radio, or other media. One of the things about a violent game is it creates a situation where the players have to really attend to the game.
Stop doing that.
Oh, jeez.
If they stop paying attention, the game's over. So with a violent game, you get a really tight feedback.
The Icarus research taught us a lot about the emotional experience of video game players. First, it taught us that watching video games is very different than playing them. The interactive experience creates greater intensity. Second of all, it taught us that girls experience violence in video games differently than boys do. That's a very important issue. And third, it taught us that violence itself, violent games, have a different quality of experience than non-violent games.
According to Dr. Klein's research, heavy gamers are becoming increasingly desensitized to violence. That is, after repeated exposure over extended periods of time, players become no longer shocked by extreme levels of violence, and subsequently, they develop an emotional numbness to the act of killing.
There's a chainsaw, there's a handgun, there's a super shotgun and the normal shotgun.
7-year-old Stefan Gander is playing Doom, and at his young age, he is extremely susceptible to the desensitization effects of violent gaming.
So why do you like the chainsaw so much?
It's so fun to kill everyone with. When you have God mode on, it's especially really fun.
Stefan is a prime example of how violent games promote a cavalier attitude towards the killing of other human beings.
Watch this, this is fun. Being killed by people, so.
And clearly, the process by which young children learn to understand the world around them is being affected by violence in video games.
I think there is no doubt that it contributes to a different sensibility to experience killing in that intensity over a duration of time must change the way you think about killing and what it means to kill.
This concern over desensitization is by no means restricted to video games. For years, violence in film, television, and music has been singled out as a contributing factor in tragedies like the Columbine Massacre. However, according to researchers, the intense realism and interactive nature of video games make children more active participants in simulated violence.
We know that kids have become accustomed to very extreme acts of violence, but now in a video game, they get to pull the trigger themselves. It's not just identification. They're in the driver's seat. They are pulling the trigger. They are the person that is deciding to kill. And therefore, the desensitization effects are more likely to be stronger with video games than with any other media.
So in light of this disturbing relationship, are game manufacturers being irresponsible when they design violent games?
Are there some irresponsible game designers when it comes to the issue of violence?
No. I don't think so. I think that you know, violence and sexuality in interactive forms of entertainment are not problematic as long as their people are forewarned about it, or at least have some level of understanding. Like any other consumer product, it's up to, you know, responsible parents, guardians, whatever, to take ownership of what it is that the people that they're responsible for are looking at and doing.
And I try what I can to try and make sure that he understands that this is violence, Stefan. This is real. This is something that, you know, if somebody really did that to you, that would really hurt.
Pam Gander, Stefan's mother, has been trying to provide her son with that context and understanding promoted by the industry as the solution to the problem of video game violence. However, according to Dr. Klein, her efforts may be in vain, because telling kids video games are not real provides no buffer against the desensitization effect, as it fails to address the emotional issues created by the repeated experience of killing. So why then do parents let their kids play violent games in the first place? To begin, the SFU study shows that many parents are simply not taking an active interest in monitoring their children's gaming. In addition, game rating systems are doing little to prevent younger kids from gaining access to violent games. And compounding the problem, personal-based computer games are not subjected to ratings. Finally, the violent games are the most popular among groups of gamers, making it difficult for individual parents to control what their children play and talk about with their friends outside of the home. These factors, combined with our society's deep fascination with computer technology, create an almost impossible situation and a constant source of tension for parents trying to insulate their children from video game culture.
There'll be several kids together in a room playing, but they don't necessarily play together.
What are you talking about?
Talking about video games.
I can't play my computer, so I'll go trash it now then.
Is that as usual?
Yeah, oh, of course, because the second I start talking about that it's a problem, that you know the violence in the games is bad, he immediately throws up his hands, and it's a huge issue, and he's just not going to play them anymore, and he'll just dump them, and, you know, so it's a little bit of dramatics that goes on.
So in the aftermath of tragic explosions of teen violence, what can be said for certain regarding the effects of violence in video games?
Certainly it's ludicrous to assume that every kid that plays violent video games is going to go out into the schoolyard and shoot up their friends. But I do think we have to ask for very vulnerable kids who are maybe isolated in their lives what it means to go into their rooms and shoot 1,000 avatars a night over the course of a year. We're talking about very violent fantasies. And what does it mean to develop this experience in your life of enjoying killing in that way?
Certainly, it seems that video games are training our children to celebrate violence, while at the same time desensitizing them to the social consequences of violent action. And while researchers are still a long way away from completely understanding the effects of violent gaming, it seems clear that video games are at least contributing to the virus of violence now infecting teen culture. Next, we're going to take a final look at the effects of video game play when Insert Coin returns.